I was born with blood on my hands. I killed my mother on the 22nd of August in the year 1642, the day the first King Charles turned traitor and chose a battlefield over a throne. She was not murdered by musket shot or slaughtered by steel blade, as were so many during those years of war. Hers was a woman's fate. She died in blood, the blood that bore me in on its tide. At least that's what I was told. I've had blood on my hands ever since. I'm elbow deep in a thick, viscous caul of it. Though I've never sweated and screamed in my own childbed, I know life and death better than most women. And now, as ever, I'm mindful of my mother. It happens every time I birth a lamb. The weighted pause before the newborn's first breath, like a clock's final turning before the hours strike. And I always think the same thing. How the moment of birth, of new life, so often means the death of something else. Such maudlin thoughts are natural in the cold, lonely months when days are icicle bright and nights are heavy with peat smoke and shadows. But the February chill has lessened lately. The sky become cloud-laden, mist thick, and the first lamb is a sure sign that spring will soon follow. It should be a moment of celebration, of gratitude and thanks, for the closing of one season and the beginning of the next. We have survived another winter. But sight of the first suckling always reminds me of the mother I never knew, the father who was left to grieve, and the debt I owe to both. With every spring and every lamb, I have a chance once again to make it right. Up on the moor, the snow is still knee-deep and sheep huddle under peat hags. Down on the valley slopes, where this one has wandered alone, just the drifts are left. The ewe has found herself a bare hollow, sheltered from the wind, against the wall of an abandoned fold, and is butting up against the stone, pawing the frozen earth. Ignoring the familiar twist inside, my guts telling me I won't like what I find, I scramble down the steep fell towards her, scattering stones, my dog, Bracken, at my heels. This place was someone's home once, a one-roomed cottage slowly crumbling to ruin, doors and shutters long since stolen for fuel, mist winding about the chimney in place of smoke, a dank tomb smell of lichened stone, the sheepfold now a stretch of tumble-down drywall. Ragged crows eye me from the naked branches of a wind-twisted willow. Urging Bracken to keep her distance, I move slowly towards the ewe. She's unsteady, stumbling away from me, front legs buckling. I'd know her as one of my own, even without the smudge of last summer's tar mark on her fleece. She's young, tupped for the first time last autumn. She should have at least 2 weeks until her time, but nature has other ideas. I call Bracken forward, and she creeps into position, head low, clever, keen eyes fixed on the sheep. The ewe grumbles, panting hard as her flanks contract. She tries to move away but careers into the wall, off balance, and stands a moment, stunned, confused. I take my chance, hook her with my crook, and pull her into the corner of the fold. She struggles and complains, but she's tired, lacking strength to fight. Her hind legs are bloodied, already blackened and stiff. There's no sign of her water. It's long been broken. But her backside is red and badly swollen. One small hoof protrudes from a seeping, sore hole. The poor creature grumbles again, loins quivering as she pushes, but instead of the double legs I hoped to see, the single hoof doesn't shift. I send a curse to the clouds. I'm too far from home to go for help, and Ambrose will be indoors by now waiting for his supper, while Dorothy stirs the pot and bounces the baby on her hip. There's a sudden cacophony as the crows rise from their watch post in a flurry of jagged wings and midnight black feathers. Bracken barks. High above, a lone merlin circles, silent, waiting. She can smell death on the wind,